You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Onyx Hunt and Onyx Maps. I really feel that every serious hunter needs Onyx on their phone, because I know Onyx is a mapping system, but I look at Onyx like a journal where you can document everything that you see while you're out in the timber. You can document scrapes and rubs and tree stand locations, trail camera locations, bedding areas, and you can look at the terrain features through the contour lines of the topographic map. You can look at the vegetation from the satellite imagery. You can look at the hybrid combination of both, and you add all these data points up together, and now what you have is a visualization of where you need to be hunting on specific wind directions, which is also on Onyx. And it's just something that, it's a one-stop shop for data and data collection. And for me, I can now look at, especially on my whitetail hunting spots, I can look back and say, I had an encounter here, I had an encounter here. On this wind, I noticed there's a big rub or a scrape line on this ridge, and I've documented all of that. So it makes everything more efficient, my decision-making process of which tree stand to hunt more efficient. If you want to find more information about Onyx, visit your local app store and just download it, or you can go to onyxmaps.com. And if you want to purchase, use the discount code NATION20, NATION 20, and first-time users will save 20%.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome back, guys. Another fun podcast lined up this week.
Fun.
fun. It is February. February the 2nd.
Yep.
Recording this release February the 4th. Super Bowl Sunday. Not that any of you guys care about that, because I know you were out running a chainsaw through the whole thing.
Hopefully with the headlamp on, at least.
Headlamp. So, anyway, you know, it's February 2nd, which is right in the heart of our busiest time of the year when it comes to consulting. Although this 2019, I'm not sure there was really a slow time of the year. It pretty much screamed all the way through. But as far as time on the road, this is it.
Yes,
we've been on the road for 7 days now. Tomorrow we'll make 8. And we've seen a lot of country. We've been a lot of places.
I've been everywhere, man.
Yeah. This week was mainly just all of Iowa.
Yeah. Which everyone's like, oh, lucky dogs. It's like, Iowa, y'all, it's like...
Iowa in February isn't that luxurious.
I have seen the sunshine for 2 days. That's like another song I almost sang right there.
The last two
days. I haven't seen the sun.
I ain't seen the sunshine.
Oh, I know, goodness. It's like I finally saw the sunshine for 2 dang days.
Yeah.
Golly, man, it's been dark and dreary up here.
Yeah.
up in the North Country.
Iowa's beautiful during that October 15th, November 15th. And I say all this jokingly, because where we've been the last 2 days is beautiful.
Oh, man, but it's awesome stuff.
The one funny thing about it is, well, yeah, it's been Iowa. Well, it's been covered in snow. Yep. We didn't see the sun for the first 5 days. Foggy. And then the sun finally came out, and now it's just a muddy mess.
Yeah, temperatures finally did warm up. But with all that being said, there is a ton of parallels to be made kind of just throughout this weekend and what's been observed across the entire state. Because truthfully, we've worked in the southern portion of the state. We've worked on the eastern portion, the very, very northeastern portion, and now the northwestern portion of the state. So it's like we've seen
northwestern
a wide range.
And then western, just
and,
western.
Yeah, and just western Iowa,
yeah,
and into Nebraska too, but just looking right at Iowa, it's like we've seen, experienced so many different things.
We've seen the plains, the rolling prairies, and then we've
the
seen
the driftless region,
and then we've seen the Lus Hills of western Iowa.
And you talk about diversity too. I was when I like across the state. I think of like all the different like regions of a state. And my mind always goes back to Virginia. We've got the coast, but then we have mountains and valleys and Piedmont and more mountains, and it's coastal region, all sorts of stuff.
Well, that's Missouri. You've got the cypress mm-hmm. swamps of the southeast. You've got yep. the grain fields of the north, the tall grass prairies, and yep. then you've got the Ozark Mountains.
That's a lot of cool stuff. So, but there's so much hype, and there's so much talk, and there's so much just discussion of just Iowa as a state. And here we are. We're a week into it. And have a lot of observations to be able to share in thoughts, because we've seen a lot, talked to a lot of people, and there really has not been one property to the next where it's like, well, this is the same old stuff. It's like every single one's really been pretty dang different.
Even a 1 day, 2 property,
yeah,
20 minutes apart stretch for me mm-hmm. on Friday
yep.
was Forest to Savannah.
Right.
And
right.
just nuts the difference. Totally different management strategies involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that. You know, this podcast is probably going to be named something addition by subtraction or something like that, as far as
everyone's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Say that again. Addition yeah. by subtraction.
Intelligence by ignorance. That's what we're going to call this one. And so it's we'll discuss it, but it's very much a way that we manage a lot of the landscape we go to. And so we'll jump into that. But I thought maybe our second podcast, Matt, is just thinking out loud here. You know, we think of Iowa. Oh, you grow big bucks in Iowa, but it's when people think of Iowa big bucks, they think of Southern Iowa usually, where a lot of outdoor television shows are out of. But through a lot of our discussion this week, we've talked about grow big bucks anywhere.
And I
that might be podcast number two this week.
Yep, might just have to do that one. It's just time and time again.
We should reiterate here, it's post-Super Bowl. It's yeah. 10 o'clock in the evening.
But before I left for Iowa, I was home one night and 4 days in Oklahoma. So I was like, I'm fumes right now. Yeah. I mean, I am fumes.
Woo. And then we get home, it's time to hit the keyboard and reports.
Oh, reports and maps, and you betcha.
Yeah. So it's been a grind here lately.
Fantastic one, though.
But, yeah, that might be podcast number two. But this podcast is really going to be a recap of our latest ventures, our latest consults and places we've seen, stuff that that is now fresh on our mind, as far as just some management strategies or management that's going to be projects that are going to be implemented that can help you guys understand how we're approaching this, how we're approaching land management, not just on our own properties, but on our clients' properties. Because, really, when we show up to a property, the end goal is, really, if we just want to be honest, I want to have the best experience here in the least amount of time that costs the least amount of money. That's really the goal for landowners. They want something. They have a vision of what they want their land to be. They want to get there as quickly as they can.
However, at the same time, they want to avoid the silver bullet because they're educated
yes.
now.
Yes.
They're like, I know, I've read through that stuff. I've probably already tried it. I've heard bad. I don't want that. I want to know, education-wise, tell me, give me the knowledge of how to naturally manipulate the landscape to produce what I want on my property. Go.
And not just for this year, but for years to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
paint the picture for me of what this should be. What does it look like? Describe it.
That I want, or everything that I need on my farm to do for me, I want that as quickly as possible without breaking the bank. Because it's really a business. Like,
We can say we don't care about this stuff, but it has to at least not break the bank.
Yeah, yeah. And or the acres, the let's just look at the property and say, like, that's the overall business, and each acre or 40-acre chunk is a department of this business. And if it's not working to support the business, it needs to be fired, it needs to be reevaluated, it needs to be redesigned, things need to be taken out, things need to be added, whatever. Maybe it just needs a big old prescribed fire to rip through it. But you just have to evaluate how are the properties set up, whether it's acre by acre or chunks, and look at those very, very critically to know what to do, and to just say, does this help me or hurt me? And it kind of goes into, well, when you look at these properties that we've been on, so I'll kind of let you start it off with those two smaller ones that you talked about there briefly. Is Forest was one of them.
Yeah, both less than 100 acres. Yeah. One was straight forest, like everything about it says forest. We're talking, yeah, it's got big oaks, it's got walnuts, it's got a lot of maples, it's got giant... It had some giant oaks just up on the crest of the hill, big wolfy-looking oaks. But for the most part, this was a forest.
Right, right. So there's one property, but then the other property...
Drive 20 minutes away, and it's like... you're driving out there, and it's just kind of rolling, where you're like, whoa, this is cool. Huge crop fields, but then just massive ridges. And you're like, man, this is pretty cool. But you kind of look and you're like, whoa, there's a big rock outcropping halfway, not up on the ridgetop, but out here in kind of the flat area.
Yep.
As it kind of rolls up, it's like, whoa, that's rock sticking out of it. This is Iowa. They're not supposed to have rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look up and you're like, wait a second. There's the, like, monster bur oak who's just standing out right up there. Yeah, and then you look around, and there's just a whole cluster of them scattered about, grass underneath, like,
yep.
Oh, it's a bur oak savanna. This little knoll is a bur oak savanna, and pretty amazing.
So you said something there, and it kind of it rings true for just a lot of the portion of the country that we travel through. And there's portions of the country that doesn't have much topography changes, but... it's amazing when you slow down and look at the topography. We're talking the aspects of slopes, the intensity, the steepness, and then the vegetation changes there that you can see, let's say, on a slope or just the general roll of an area. Those are indicators or signs, let's say, of what should be there, what we should see. You know, a lot of times we'll talk about, oh, okay, well, there's a little blue mixed in the timber. It's not getting any sunlight. That's an indicator species. Well, sometimes just the topography of an area is going to tell us or give us a sign or a clue as to what should be there, having just general background knowledge. And then this other species that are present, like you said, you saw kind of the rolling terrain, and then there's this big rock, and then you get to the bur oak. It's like, this plus that plus that plus that equals historically bur oak savanna. Woo, here we are.
Yep.
Perfect. But it's those clues. You can be traveling across a state, driving down the interstate, but just take in to account topography changes and what's represented on there. Like even yesterday when we were in the Lus Hills, we were looking across one of these just very steep hills. And, you know, it's got, like, kind of little folds, little broader ravines. But in some of these areas that were a little more protected in these little bowls, there's shrubs, like, starting in every single little one of them. It's like, well, that's not just, like, random chance that those shrubs are growing specifically right there every single time. Like, that's important. That's, like, a key. Take note of that. Like, you don't see those same shrubs growing around the spine of the ridge or something that maybe cattle previously have had a lot more access to, or fire hasn't ripped up through that portion as easily. So when you're trying to go, whether it's plant shrubs or just evaluate the landscape, just let it talk to you. Like, let just be observant about what it is and then try and go make that elsewhere. But there's just those clues for sure.
Absolutely. It was just it kind of goes back to podcasts we've talked about in the past about how you manage the land the way nature wanted it to be, what it wanted to be, not just try to make it something that it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we don't go into that forest, the forested property, and say, we want this to be savanna. And you just start killing every tree going, I'm going to only leave the oaks, because you're going to be constantly fighting with woody sprouts and constantly fighting with maples. And you're going to fight and fight and fight and fight and then realize at the end of your ownership or end of your life going, boy, that was a really just an uphill battle that I never even got to the top.
Oh, throwing left and right and jabs and uppercuts, I didn't ever win.
And then like this prairie property, this savanna type property, is if you want this to be forest, it's like, okay, well, let's start planting trees like crazy. And then 10 years in, the native grasses all of a sudden catch fire and
there goes that investment.
And then the trees are burned up. And the only thing left standing are the bur oaks, because they were made to be protected.
Yep.
They could handle it. And you're like, this is just not a very good plan.
Right.
And so, you know, you always manage for what the landscape wants it to be and try to make a few tweaks and little additions here to maximize your hunting experience and make it to where you can really manage it and enjoy it and not be fighting and banging your head against the wall.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So like for me, we get to this first property. It's a forest, man. It's the landowner lives on the property as the dad lives on the other property. So I visited two farms in one day, both under 100 acres, and both are totally different. The management involved is totally different. The project ahead of them is totally different. One farm is really managing what's there and trying to remove to enhance the habitat. So he's going to be removing some things to make it better. That's the addition by subtraction. And then the other farm is going to be adding things while in the process of, it's going to be adding things more than it is removing things.
Right.
While the other farm is removing things while adding a few things.
Sure. And that's why I think like last week's podcast was there ain't no cookie cutter like stamp to consulting. You're on both sub 100 acre properties 20 minutes away, and the prescription would have been completely different for each property, yet the end goal was somewhat similar, right? We wanted obviously to improve it for wildlife.
Better habitat.
Yeah, but so better habitat for what should be there.
So like one, it was a father and two sons. And working with them, they basically just wanted to make it an overall better family experience. They wanted to have more deer that lived on the property so they could hunt them. But they also wanted to have the chance to hunt rabbits or possibly the chance to have pheasants or quail show up.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to have the ability to squirrel hunt. But overall, they just wanted to be good stewards of the land.
Gotta love that.
And so, you know, it was looking at the forest property going, man, there's just no management to this timber. There has really been no management to the timber, and that's the biggest chunk of your property. So let's manage that.
Yep.
We need to add diversity within the trees. And so that comes in many forms, not just species of trees, but age of trees.
Yes.
And so pretty much right now it's a monoculture of trees. They're all the same age. There's not a difference in age or growth structure, and then there's certainly no diversity within the understory of herbaceous plants and grasses. It's time to do some cutting.
Yeah. I was on a property today that was just straight up bur oak savanna in Nebraska, and it was a little alarming because the canopy wasn't 100% or anything close like that, and a couple portions of bur oak canopy, but it was choked out by eastern red cedar, and a ton of mid-story canopy hackberries. I said, guys, let's just look at this for a second. What would happen if all these oaks died out for some reason? Like, you have no oak regeneration happening. Like, there's no younger trees. There's no species that are that are coming back. And I get it. Like, bur oaks can stand fire. They're mighty. But, like, literally, there's nothing else here that is going to help this along. Like, worst case scenario, we got to kind of plan. We got to make sure that there's the ability for regeneration of the species that is most conducive to this site. And we see that often across the landscape, maybe in areas where bush honeysuckle is way overtaking the understory. And that there is another example of addition by subtraction.
Yeah.
Big time. Got to remove. You got to get rid of the bad before really any good can come back and happen.
Yeah, you consider the Lus Hills. They're a kind of a barren hillside naturally.
If you don't know what they are, to just Google it and like just look at the pictures.
Yeah,
it's really pretty.
You know, when you look at the Lus Hills, Council Bluffs is kind of the name because of what occurred there historically. Lewis and Clark on their big expedition. The Corps of Discovery, they're going up the Missouri River and they meet the Native Americans and they have a council on the bluffs, which is the Lus Hills, and looking over the surrounding landscape of the Missouri River Valley. And that region of Iowa, these hills are just beautiful.
Golly.
Just,
I can't even imagine.
But they're highly erodible mounds. Semi-mountains, but they're called hills, very steep in places, but they're almost all historically barren other than the bur oaks that grew around them.
Around them, in the drains,
You have a species that's adapted to fire. You have shrubs that can handle fire in pockets and even intense fires when they get severe. It's just going to set them back, but it's not going to completely remove them. And then you have all these native grasses and forbs that were highly adapted to fire. And so this
necessary.
This region of the world we know is historically managed by, you know, bison herds grazing, but then also fire. And once you remove fire, we have just the massive explosion of non-native species like Siberian elms, but then also you have an explosion of native species that can't handle fire, eastern red cedar. And you just look at that and you go, okay, this region is being overran with, even today's client showed me aerial images from the 30s. There's no cedars around, and now there's just cedars everywhere.
Everyone take a second. Say that one again. There was no cedars around in 1930.
Yeah, none. And even in the mid-60s, there was way less cedars.
And there's probably way more savanna-type setting than overcrowded, unmanaged timber during that time
absolutely.
Frame, too.
Because fire was abundant.
It was abundant. It was prevalent. It was utilized. There was more grazing. It just was a differently managed landscape. The land itself is still the same.
Yes, the land hasn't changed, and a lot of the native seed source has not changed, other than one main factor being removed, and that's fire.
A disturbance.
When you look at these steep hillsides, it's very, it's a lot of native grass, little blue stem, side oats, grama. You even have Indian grass and big blue.
Yep.
And it's really steep. So all signs say, you know, in certain conditions, a fire would rip across that landscape.
When I say rip, I mean rip.
And you can, even now, you can look across and see hills where you're like, whoa, like today's console that we're not even going to talk about much. Today's console is like, whoa, look at that hillside over there. That hillside's more bare and it's open. He goes, yeah, the wildfire a couple years ago. Well, that's why there's no cedars. Mm-hmm. If we just walked away. If human two-legged man, Homo sapiens, just left and let that go, there'd be a lightning strike, and woof, the whole place would burn. It'd be right back to
be super,
very
super
barren.
Intense.
Yeah, it'd be catastrophic right now as far as it would be crowned out cedar trees, and it'd be amazing.
It'd be amazing, but like, yeah, I mean, there's life, and there'd be addition by subtraction.
Yeah, you'd subtract the cedars, and you would add even more diversity with shrubs and forbs and grasses, and also more bur oak regeneration, mm-hmm. because this species of oak has got armor to protect itself from fires, and you're going to open that canopy back up, and you're going to see more young oak seedlings start emerging because it needs that more open, that open canopy. It needs that sunlight. It needs that fire, and it's going to start growing. But right now, it can't do it because elms and cedar trees and hickories and all these other species are starting to crowd in because fire hasn't been on the landscape.
Yep. Yep, that periodic fire, random fire, is so necessary.
Yeah. And so flip back over to what we were talking about, my consult in eastern Iowa, savanna landscape, but it was all pastured. So it's tall fescue growing underneath it. You can look at 150-plus-year-old bur oaks everywhere, and you're not seeing many oaks that are 50 years or less.
Right.
You don't see, so, and the landowner's going, some of these oaks are dying. It's like.
Oh, yeah. I saw that a lot today.
A lot of it was what I think was probably herbicide drift.
Oh, really?
Where you're seeing the tops, the outside perimeter, like.
No kidding. Huh.
Were these lower on the hillside? Or it was like higher? Huge crop fields all around it.
Yeah.
And it's like south, so just north. So any kind of southerly wind, it just goes right up there. And anyway, he's complaining about it. And he's starting to plant some oaks and starting to plant some other trees, but it's like, what's going to happen if all these start dying? There's no other oaks, and it's going to turn into whatever it wants to be, probably prairie, because that's the big plan for him, is he's going to plant a lot of native grasses and wildflowers, try to restore the prairie, remove the fescue, start burning, and start trying to restore the native landscape.
That's exciting.
And plant shrubs, too. So he's going to have giant 200-plus bur oaks. He's going to have pockets of plums and pockets of gray dogwoods. And he's just going to have native grasses and wildflowers everywhere.
Sounds like a winning combination to me. But you have to – you can't just automatically go out there and do that. There's been very few properties that you go to that's like, you know what, you're just ready to add something to improve this, or you just need to continue to maintain this, and you're good. It's like you have to either go from adding sunlight, which means removing canopy, or removing invasive species, one to just get rid of them, or two to add more sunlight. You have to typically, on most properties, remove and or subtract, hence the name of the podcast, subtract something to bring or add value to it. And a lot of times, yes, you're talking about adding some shrubs and doing this and that. However, sometimes that weed base is really super good already. Like some of the areas we looked at a couple of days ago on a property in the Lusk Hills, it was like the client asked, do I need to add shrubs to that? It's like, no, they're going to come back.
Look around.
There's sumac dotted here. There's gray dogwood there. There's American plum right there. You're good. Like, let's just let time heal itself. Let's throw some fire and then just kind of walk away for a little
bit. Let's remove what somebody thought was a good idea in years past. Let's go ahead and just remove that and let nature fix itself.
Yep, because it will.
Yeah,
like every sign and every species there was confirmation that it would. We were seeing at the very peak some types of a prairie clover. We saw sunflower,
a couple types of milkweed.
Yep, yeah. That I still want to know exactly which one one was,
because like I saw one that I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's whorled milkweed.
Yeah.
But I'm not positive because now it's already lost seed. It's just kind of a shell of a plant.
But there's a couple places where it's like just a little bit of wet feet, so it could have been the swamp. Yeah. And I was like, I'm not 100% sure. And then, gosh, I'm trying to think about what else we saw. We saw cone flowers.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of echinacea.
And then there was blazing star.
Lead plant.
Yeah, the lead plant.
And that's...
And a diversity of the grasses, too.
Yeah.
The one we don't see a ton of was pretty prevalent was the side oats grandma.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Don't typically get to see that. But it's like, gosh, it's all there. It's,
yeah.
You don't have... Here, you just don't have to add. You just got to take away. And you're a rock star.
Yeah.
And you're doing something that nobody else is doing around you.
Well, cedar trees are great deer bedding, so... Taking those
wrong.
Away. Wrong. Yeah. Just so many incredible things to do, you know, with the Lust Hills property. We're going to addition by subtraction. And then going back to Eastern Iowa where I was, there's mainly just going to be more cutting, removing of trees, thinning trees, trying to get canopy removed so we can get some sunlight, some energy from above, from the sun, to reach the forest floor. So we have diversity with herbaceous plants.
Yep.
And young forests. So we have woody browse. I mean, we're talking Iowa here. So woody browse is just low on the list of being around. And
you say low on the list, not low on the priority list, but just low on the prevalence rate of that resource.
How many times woody browse is just one of those things that's so overlooked, it's so underutilized, and so mismanaged. Actually,
because we don't have shrubs.
It's not
anymore,
even managed. It's just gone. Nobody's really managing that much for woody browse, other than through hinge cutting.
What's that?
Yeah, Google it. Do something dangerous.
Never heard of her.
Do it. And it's like hinge cutting is not – it's one thing. It's a tool. It's not even that great of a tool when it comes to trying to add woody browse over the landscape and manage a forest. So we're going to be doing some cutting and just adding woody browse. And so we're adding by subtracting trees. And then we're adding by subtracting – smooth brome around the edge of his main. He's got his yard and he's got a few little openings and he's gonna have to remove the smooth brome. And it's just like that. Snap your fingers and he's changed. He could cut right now and cut till the end of March and completely change his hunting on that property forever.
Yeah.
Then you flip over and it's like we're adding on the other place. We're gonna subtract the tall fescue, we're gonna add native grasses and shrubs. We're going to plant willows along the riparian area of the little creek. And boom, 5 years from now, doesn't even look like the same place.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's been a little bit of a common theme. We'll kind of wrap this one up. But I think that you have to encourage people, but at the same time, you have to provide enthusiasm to them through education. Because a lot of what we're finding is that here are some rare or threatened or limited resources on properties, and people don't yet know what they have yet within their land or their property, and they don't or can't or haven't yet seen the potential that's there. So when we come to a property, we're probably going to get excited if we see something really cool. We're probably going to get jacked up when we see the Lust Hills or the Driftless region of Iowa or Eastern or Western Iowa or Nebraska. We're going to probably get excited because everywhere we go, there's opportunity and there's resources to be managed in a way that are going to reach people's goals. And that's a good kind of tie into the other podcast. So depending on which one you listen to.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about that, definitely check out the other podcast. But we get excited and we hope that that's encouragement and fuel and provide. That's like the other piece. Hopefully that's provided beyond just the knowledge of what to do. But it's, gosh, this makes a difference. This means something. It's not just boring science. Or boring historical maps that don't mean anything. It's real. It's there.
It's not just deer management anymore.
Nah. We done graduated out of that.
It's so much more.
Man.
Guys, you know, if you're out there listening and you're trying to figure out, you know, it's going in February, which February is a great month for habitat improvement, especially in your timbered acres, and you're trying to figure out what to do. Sometimes it's best to not think about what you're preparing to add, but maybe there's a lot of stuff on your farm that you need to take away first. And what sometimes, or a lot of times, those acres that are going to be taking away something is only going to improve your hunting way more than anything you could buy in a bag, buy in a tube, buy in a store. And just sometimes it's best if we can just get out of the way and let nature do its thing.
Yep.
So, guys, hopefully you check us out on the other podcast this week. What do we got? We got NWTF coming up in 2 weeks in Nashville, Tennessee. So if you're anywhere in the area, that's a fantastic show. We're going to have a booth. Come by. See us. Also going to be at QDMA Whitetail Weekend in March. So please come by or register online now, QDMA.com. Also
Facebook, Instagram,
YouTube
it. We're there.
Guys, thanks so much once again. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.